Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. I'm bashing the microphone here as I start. Well, I was reading my second guest's book today, and there was a quote in there by comedian Paula Poundstone, who said, "Adults are always asking little kids what they want to be when they grow up, because they're looking for ideas." And I think there's probably an element of truth in that, but I think it's very true to say that both of today's guests have found what they were looking for and continue to evolve their passion to becoming bigger, better, bolder. My second guest is motorcycle riding trainer, business consultant, and idea success coach Sylvia Henderson. She's been with us once before. And if you've ever had a big idea and done nothing with it, or sat in a meeting waiting to share your brilliant idea but were afraid to speak up, Sylvia Henderson will share how to shape your idea from concept to fulfillment and get the credit you deserve. But first, I'm very pleased to bring you insights on running your own business, work-life balance, and motherhood from an amazing young woman who juggles all of that and much more. She's become one of my favorite people up here in the Northwest. You know when you meet someone if they're the real deal, and she is the real deal. She's Seattle's Karen Brown. She's a mom, businesswoman, professional blogger, and author of Food Lover's Guide to Seattle. Now, because of scheduling conflicts, we actually recorded our conversation here in the studio last month, and I'm bringing it to you today for the first time live on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Here's Karen Brown, alias her Twitter handle, at Frantic Foodie, founder of Foodpertunity and franticfoodie.com. My guest is fueled by insatiable curiosity to uncover every food-related spot and meet every foodie in Seattle. Why? Well, let me introduce her and we'll find out. Karen Brown describes herself as a food entrepreneur. She was named Doer of the Week by MarthaStewart.com and has been featured in Puget Sound Business Journal, Portland Business Journal, Sunset Magazine, Seattle Times, Chicago Tribune, Edible Seattle, and Seattle Metropolitan. In addition to her own blog, franticfoodie.com, Karen writes for MyNorthwest.com. She's the author of The Food Lover's Guide to Seattle and the founder of Foodpertunity. Welcome to the show, Karen Brown.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm really pleased that you're here, Karen. I met you several months ago. You were on a panel at the Society of Professional Journalists. They put on these winter workshops, and you were one of the foodie experts on the panel. And I just thought you had a really interesting story as a food entrepreneur to share with our listeners. So we're going to talk about that a little today. I want to talk first of all, and then we'll look at some of your background and how you got here. But I first of all want to talk about something that I heard you describe as a dream come true. You say one of the most amazing things that happened this year was that you were featured in Sunset Magazine. Three whole pages.
That was amazing.
So tell us about that. What happened? Why was that a dream for you?
Well, it's one of the magazines that I love to read because I love reading about all the local and all the things that have to do with Seattle and around here. So for me, that was kind of something I thought would never happen. And they asked me for that article about my favorite places to eat. And I just put together a roundup, and that was really special for me. And I did not think I would have a full page. What I understood was I'd probably have a little part in it, but it was great to see a full page photo.
You have a full page photo and then another couple of pages written, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's fun. I mean, that must have felt, like quite a pat on the back for you.
Yeah, it was. It's just really special because some of the things, when these things happen, it's hard to believe it.
Mm. Well, you know, there are foodies everywhere. And Seattle, of course, is, I think, really a foodie city. Why do you think food has become so popular? We've got shows about food. We've got books. You've written your own book about food. You blog about food. There are hundreds of bloggers just in Seattle alone on this. Why do you think it's become so popular?
I think food is something that everybody can relate to. And that's what it is. I think that we all have to eat. So it's nice that we all have something in common, and there's always something to talk about around food. So that's what I think it is about food. And in Seattle especially, there are just such great ingredients everywhere, and all these local ingredients that there's always something to talk about. So it's something that just gets people talking.
Yeah, we're lucky because we have all these farmers markets, we have local growers, and I've actually been to a couple of, gosh, really outstanding foodie events, unrelated to what you were doing, because I hadn't met you then, but they just were a superb events, and I've eaten all over the world, and I was blown away by the food that we had.
I think we're lucky, because a lot of the chefs here just keep it simple, but they have such good ingredients to play with, and that's what it is. I mean, we have it all in our backyard.
So let's look at how somebody becomes a food entrepreneur and what that really means. And I saw on your website that you say life is about reading between the lines. So let's read between some of your lines. You grew up in Canada, in Montreal, I believe.
I did. I grew up in Montreal until I was, I left there when I was about 17. And then I moved to Israel for a few years just because I wanted to discover that area. And then I moved to Seattle.
So. Yeah. And so you speak a foreign language. So you've taught French. Were you teaching French in Israel?
I was teaching English.
English. Actually. Okay. But you speak fluent French, right?
I do. I speak fluent French and Hebrew.
Which must help a lot when you go to markets. And
it helps a lot.
In Montreal. How did you arrive in Seattle?
So we decided to move to Seattle, and I just came here. And
but why Seattle? What was there something in particular that drew you? Like when I moved up here, I went all up and down the East Coast, and I was living in San Diego at the time. And so I thought, no, I'm not sure I'm ready to be an Eastie yet. And so I came all up and down the West Coast, and I flew over Seattle, and I was like, oh, I can do this, yeah.
My husband got a job here, so that was part of it. But then, you know, after we came here for a few months, and we were like, okay, we want to stay here. So we had that opportunity. We took it.
Right. But at this time, you weren't involved in food at all. You weren't actually working, as I understand, when you came here. You wanted to take a few months off and just spend some time figuring out what you wanted to do when you grew up.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was doing. I was just trying different things out. I actually went to train to be a yoga instructor. And I did a really rigorous yoga training with this big guru, and I realized that this is not what I want to do. And I started cooking at that time. I just started experimenting with food in every way. And I decided that I have to learn about Seattle through food. So I would go to the market and buy all these ingredients and then Google and learn how to make certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And I took cooking classes all over Seattle. I think I've taken probably every cooking class in Seattle. And one of them that was particularly interesting was I took the Art Institute of Seattle. They have a culinary program they used to have. They don't have it anymore. But it was like a weekend program where it was intense culinary training. And that was so fun. So I learned how to cook through that and through all the classes that I took. And I just wanted to discover everything about food here. And I didn't know where it would go, so I just gave it a try.
And at some point you decided, do I want to be a professional chef or not? And you decided no.
Yeah, I wanted to be a chef. I thought that would be a great career for me. And then at the same time, I wanted to have, you know, a family and kids. And I knew that chef's hours are a lot of hours and working on your feet, and it would be hard to do that pregnant. So I guess I didn't want it that bad. But I thought that I wanted it, and I started to intern and work at events and in restaurants, and I realized that I'm not cut out for that.
Yeah, I read somewhere, I just can't put my finger on it right now, but I read that you volunteered a lot at events.
Yeah, I would
to get more into the food community. So tell us a little bit about what kind of events you volunteered at and how that helped you.
Well, basically, I just, you know, it was starting to get expensive and not working, so I had to figure out a way to get into the events for free. So I started to volunteer at any event I could find. So I would go to one event. There was a Bastille Day that was really fun for me. And I think I was serving French fries and merguez sausages. But, you know, I would just find an event and then go and see what I could do. Sometimes it was just frying bacon or checking in people at the door. And at those events, I would be networking, meeting people and, you know, connecting with people in the industry, and these people who I've met over the years have become my friends. So I figured just by doing that, I would meet a lot of people and not have to pay to get in.
Good idea. And that's what I did when I moved up here, was volunteer at conferences. And I met some really great people. And you usually don't have to pay to get into the event then, too.
It makes a huge difference. You can go to a lot of events.
So. Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue talking with my guest, Karen Brown. She's a food entrepreneur. She writes a blog, writes a couple of blogs, actually. And she's the author of The Food Lover's Guide to Seattle. She talks about best local specialties, markets, recipes, restaurants, and events. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Well, French style is so fussy. French style,
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Who is Chopra?
What is Chopra?
When is Chopra?
Joe Janot is the host of a brand new show called Chopra. Joe has been nicknamed Chopra by his friends and colleagues, who find his advice and insight to be enlightening, just like a certain other talk show host of world renown. Born and raised in Seattle, independent-minded Joe Janot is bringing issues to the airwaves that make you ponder, laugh, and deliberate. The Chopra Show is about the ins and outs of food and drink, relationships, entertainment, and so much more. Get to know Chopra every Thursday at 2, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
OMG! Grammar abuses, no, LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Coming up next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, when cardiologist Barbara Natterson Horowitz was called to consult on an unusual patient at the Los Angeles Zoo, she discovered the tiny monkey had a syndrome identical to a human condition. She also discovered that veterinarians treated the condition in surprising and innovative ways. Join us next Monday for Zubiquity, what animals can teach us about health and the science of healing. Vicki also discovers how Lisa Jackson transformed from struggling mom to number one on the New York Times bestselling list. Her latest book, You Don't Want to Know, is based in the fog-filled islands off the Pacific Northwest. See conversationslive.net for guest details, or contact Vicki at info@conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
What is it? Something sort of delicate. French style.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And I'm really pleased to have as my guest in this segment, Karen Brown. She is a food entrepreneur right here in Seattle. If you are a foodie, I'm betting you know Karen, or have run into her, or been to one of her events, or seen her book. She's the author of Food Lover's Guide to Seattle. So, Karen, we looked a little about your background, you know, how you got to where you were in Seattle. You'd done all this exploring, and what do I want to do? You decided you didn't want to be a professional chef. Tell us a little bit about the Seattle bloggers, food bloggers, and how that helps you get to the next level. What is it, the Seattle food bloggers, first of all?
So I started a blog just because I wanted to document everything I was going through and everything that I was learning. I wasn't sure where that would go. My blog started off as kind of a cooking blog, and then it evolved into an event blog and what's happening in Seattle, which I think happens a lot, is you start somewhere and you don't know where it's going to end up. But I was blogging and cooking and I was enjoying that. But then I would get lonely, you know, just all day behind the computer or in the kitchen. So I decided I should find a way to connect with other food bloggers. And that's how I started the Seattle Food Blogger Events, which are basically monthly events where I'd get a lot of food bloggers together and we would just network and get inspired by each other. And I always had like some kind of part of the event, like somebody who would come in, author, to talk to us. And you know, we've spoken with many authors, like we spoke with a pioneer woman when she was in town, and Ruth Reichel. And so I just wanted to get a way to get everybody together and motivated.
And so from this then, so obviously you're becoming a very key person. You're introducing other people to each other. You're getting to know more and more people, getting more established in Seattle because you were a newbie. How did that lead to the next step, which I believe was Foodpportunity?
So I started off the food bloggers with about 20 food bloggers a really long time ago. And now the list is over 200 food bloggers that are involved. And every event, we have different amounts of people. But basically, other companies and restaurants wanted to be involved. And I didn't want to just pitch the food bloggers, restaurants, or companies. So I thought, you know, there has to be a different event where food bloggers and companies and restaurants and everybody can get together. So that's how Foodpportunity came together.
Okay. And so then Foodpportunity, you put on events. Are they random? They're not monthly, are they? They're kind of random events?
They're quarterly.
Quarterly. Yeah. Okay. So, and they're quite large, as I understand. And you have some really big people come in the industry.
Yeah, there's around, you know, a few hundred people at these events. So they're pretty big.
And yeah. So what kind of people come? Do eaters like to come?
Yeah.
I mean, is it all industry people or people who just like to eat food? Do they come too?
It's mostly industry people, but it's also, I mean, it's open to everybody. It's open to food passionate people. But the people that come are a lot of bloggers, chefs, restaurateurs, companies, food companies. I just wanted there to be like a place where everybody could start networking and working together. And that's how it worked. And there's a lot of food tweeters too. So people who are just on social media related to food. But it is different than, for instance, another food event where people would just go for the food. People here are going to make connections and to meet people.
Right. And I understand it's for Seattle and Portland. People come out from Portland too.
They do. And I also do the events in Portland. So
didn't know that. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
So you're a busy lady. So let's talk about how you manage all this, because you also write franticfoodie.com, which is a food blog. What? Yeah. Why frantic? I read that you're a frantic kind of person. You seem very calm today, but
I'm pretty frantic. I just have a lot of energy, and I have to put my energy somewhere. And so that's the kind of thing. Like when I was younger, I was really frantic, and I didn't know what to do with it. I was like that kid that would not sit still in his class, and yeah, I would be kicked out of class every day. But now the energy is just somewhere all the time. So I think that's what makes me frantic.
Mm-hmm. And you're a mom?
I am. I have 3 kids under 3.5.
And how do you mind sharing how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 33.
You're 33. So you've accomplished quite a lot. I mean, you know, you've lived abroad. You've created this unique niche lifestyle, career lifestyle for yourself. And you've got new twins, I understand.
I do. I have twins that are 9 months old.
9 months old. And you're still sane.
Kind of.
And your eldest one is what, 4?
3.5.
3.5, yeah. She's still smiling.
Almost 4,
She's still smiling.
I love it. I think I just need a lot of things happening all the time. And that's just what keeps me grounded and happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us some of the things that you do to help balance the work lifestyle, because this is something that many women face when they're, you know, and I know guys, there are guys who look after children, other primary caregivers too. But how do you balance it within your family, with your husband? How do you balance the business and the children?
So I have a lot of rules kind of in my head that I work by. Yeah, I have rules and I live by like a lot of slogans and expressions. So like when I get a little bit stressed out, for instance, I'll just try to calm myself down with like a slogan or something that will calm me down. So, you know, when I get really frantic about not being able to be at every place that I want to be, I kind of think like, if I was on my deathbed right now, would I be worrying about what people think or worrying about my family? So those kind of things keep me, you know, happy where I am. I try not to check my email in the evenings. I try to be present where I am. So if I'm at work, I'm 100% at work. And if I'm with the kids, I'm 100% with the kids.
I think that's a key thing, because I know so many people who are at work and feeling guilty they're not with the kids or the husband. And then when they're at home, they're feeling guilty because they should be doing work. I think that is a really key factor. You just said you focus on wherever you're at.
The guilt thing, I don't get the mommy guilt thing, to be honest. I mean, I used to have mommy guilt when my son was born. Every time I wasn't with him, I thought, you know, this kid will grow up not knowing anything or something. But I don't get it anymore, because now I realize that, you know, that age in the beginning is just, it's time for mom too. So I don't really get the mommy guilt thing. Mm-hmm. I just try to be the best at what I can do. And I also think to myself, like, a lot of people say to me, you know, don't you feel bad that you're working, or do you ever feel guilty? And I just think, I feel good that my son sees me going after my goals. And I feel good that my son sees that you can, if you work at something, you can succeed at it. So
yeah, I think that's important. Do you work at home, Karen? Do you have separate offices?
I work at home. I just go into a room and close the door. So yeah.
Right, right. And that's a key thing too. I have a little sign on my door, at work or at play. I flip it around, which
I need to do that. That's my next step. I think that's
So I want to talk about you run into so many different people. And, you know, with everything that's happening in the corporate world and the business, the financial world, so many people have taken opportunities to become self-employed, or to, you know, they're thinking of becoming self-employed. Looking back on what you've learned during your experience, what are a couple of the key factors that you would recommend to people? What's the top advice you'd give to people?
Well, one of the things that I think that you have to just always be rethinking and really changing your way of thinking, you know, going with the times. Like when I started, Twitter had just started. So I feel like people sometimes talk about PR and how PR has changed. And instead of wasting energy talking about how things have changed, just mm-hmm. getting with the changes, getting on Pinterest or getting on the new thing and figuring it out. And I think that's what's really important. Not to look at how things were, but kind of look forward, see where the next best thing is, And also take a lot of risks. Like, yeah. I think that if you're going to open a business, you have to be ready for risks and be ready for rejection, because it happens. So I shoot in a lot of directions, and I'm always, you know, pitching one more thing or working on one more thing. And I don't really think about what, you know, if something didn't work out, I don't waste any energy on it. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's important, especially when you have your own business. Not wasting it. I mean, I will reflect if there's a reason that I need to reflect on it. But I don't waste energy thinking, oh, that didn't work. I just kind of go for the next thing.
Huge difference. And I'm guessing you have to pitch a lot in your line of work.
I do. Yeah.
Is that something that came naturally to you, or did you have to kind of work your way up to that?
I had to learn, and I just learned by watching people around me, a lot of things. Like, there was a lady who passed away a few years ago, Eileen Mintz, and she was a key lady in the food industry, and she was just a great networker. And I, at that point, did not really know how to network, and I would see her walk into events, and she'd be like, hi, I'm Eileen Mintz, and I never had that confidence. And then I slowly learned from her. She was a really good friend of mine, and I feel like I didn't know any of those things. They were always in me. But when you kind of learn, the more you read, the more you look around. So,
Tell me a little bit about how your husband helps you in this situation. I read on your blog that your life journey is with your husband. He's very supportive. And you actually share different points of view on food.
Yeah. He likes chain restaurants. So we always have to argue about where we're going to go. But yeah, no, I think that I couldn't do this without my husband. I just feel like having him has just been so much support. And it's really important with whoever you're with to explain your goals and to work at things together. For me, his support is just being there and helping with the babies when I need, or, you know, watching the kids so I can go out. But that's what he does. And we kind of work together. When he's working on his work stuff, then I'm, you know, I have to be helpful and help around with everything else. And when I need something, I just ask him. So it works out great. I think that I feel very lucky to have that support.
Right. Oh, definitely. Tell us how you got the Doer of the Week award from MarthaStewart.com. That's quite an accomplishment, I would think.
Yeah, that was really great. Basically, they were looking around for people who are doing great things, and they looked at my story, and that was it. It was just so fun to be featured on their website. They have this great community called the Dreamers and To-Doers, where all mothers or women business people can connect online. So.
And how do you think you've changed during the course of, like, the last 5 years, which is primarily when you've been growing from, hey, what do I want to do, to where you're at now?
I've grown up. I mean, everybody who's known me since I started, I was a little girl. I was a little bit more naive. Today I've learned, you know, to take things lightly, I would say. I used to get so insulted if something didn't work out, or so upset. And at this point in my life, it's just work. And I have this really big difference between work and life. And I'll say, you know, that was work, that didn't work out. It's a professional thing. If something doesn't work out with a company for some reason or something, I never take it personal. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of, I guess, growing up. And also just right now, I don't have a fear of doing things anymore. I just kind of go for everything that I want. I think those are things that I've learned with age. And especially, you know, the way, you know, when you're in your 20s, you look at yourself and, like, you find every blemish or everything that's wrong. And I feel like now at this age, since I've turned, you know, over 30, I've started to appreciate my everything about myself.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I feel good where I am, and I don't see, you know, every wrinkle or every... Yeah.
Well, that's because you have none, honey. I'm looking right at you.
I have makeup on, you know. I've learned how to apply makeup, too.
But you just made another key point. You said you don't take things personally, because I think so many people are just waiting to be offended about everything,
yeah.
You know. And we could take offense at so many things. But it is business at the end of the day. And somebody has a need or they don't have a need. And but it's great that you've realized that so early on in your business.
Yeah, I think that has been the one thing that keeps me going forward, is that I really, even within friends or within anything, I don't look for something that, you know, personal ever. I mean, I just, and even when there is something, like, for instance, if something happens or doesn't work out with a friend or something, I move on. I don't hold grudges. I try to see, like, the good in everybody, and I think that's something that happens with age. Like, it's so easy when you're young to, like, gossip and find things about the other person bothers you. But now I feel like, okay, whatever, I'm not wasting my time in anything like that. And I'm happy that I don't burn bridges with any relationships. And I'm happy about that, because sometimes, you know, somebody could really annoy you and then you can just fall in love with them at the same time. So
yeah, and at the end of the day, we're all human. We're all
exactly.
Human. What do you know now that you wish you'd known when you very first started your business? This one always stumps people. So
I know.
I need
a second to think about it.
It's okay to turn the cogs there. We'll play some music while the cogs are turning.
I just know now that you should choose the name of your business very carefully. So that's one thing. I mean, Foodportunity, as much as I love the name, not everyone loves it. And I feel like when you choose a business name, you should just choose something that would be even a little, sometimes a little more generic, works better, so that, you know, comes up and searches easier. And so that's one thing that I've learned.
I like Frantic Foodie. Has that been received well?
Also, foodie, when I started, was like a word that nobody knew. I remember the word foodie, people would be like, oh, you called yourself a foodie. That's so funny. And people didn't know what it was. And now a lot of people don't like the word foodie.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
So, oh, interesting. Why not?
I think people think it's cutesy, and I think just, you know, it's been used so many times. But there aren't really, I mean, I wrote the whole food lovers book, and I tried to think of so many words instead of foodie, and there aren't that many words. You know, every word kind of has its own meaning, but
right.
It's hard to find, like, a word that really describes someone who just likes to eat
right.
on all levels.
Right. So think of our name carefully before we name ourselves, our business. So let's talk a little bit about the book, because we're almost at the end of our segment. And this has received great reviews. It's called The Food Lover's Guide to Seattle. Best local specialties, markets, recipes, restaurants, and events. And you've got road trips in here. You tell us what's in here, because there's a lot of stuff in here.
So basically, there's restaurants, there's specialty shops, there's farmers markets. Basically, I wanted to write a book that would make you feel like you know what's going on in the food scene. So I wanted everything
in
there.
And in particular in Seattle.
Seattle. Yeah, and I really wanted something that people would open up and they'd be like, oh, I didn't know this. So I have a lot about where all the farmers markets are and what are the key food events you should go to every year. And it's a friendly guide. It's not like talking about what I hate at restaurants. Yes, I'll talk about certain things that you shouldn't order, but it's mostly positive way of telling you, you know, where to go, what to eat. And I just wanted it all in one place and by neighborhood. So basically you could say, oh, I want to hang out in Ballard and do a Ballard restaurant stroll today. And you can choose, you know, a few restaurants in Ballard and bakeries and do it that way.
Yeah. And I particularly, because I like road trips and I love that you've included road trips in here. Do you have a favorite type of food yourself?
I love Mexican food. Mm. So I really like Mexican food, but I like all different foods. It really depends on my mood.
Yeah, you've got kid friendly spots in here too, which I guess is important, right?
Oh yeah, for me it is.
So, final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
I just want to say thank you for having me. Thank you so much. I love the food world, and I love what we have here. And it's not about the money. A lot of people say when they meet me, oh, I don't have money to go to those restaurants. I want people to know that, you know, we're so lucky. You can just go buy strawberries that are beautiful and do something great with them here. So it's easy to enjoy the food scene, even if you can't afford it as much. And also, I mean, just enjoy the summer here and go for what's in season and enjoy it.
Yeah, and you say yourself, you cook a lot at home. So even though you write about restaurants a lot and bring a lot of people together, you still cook a lot at home.
I make sure there's home-cooked food every night, so it's important to me.
You say the family that eats together stays together?
Exactly.
Karen Brown, you're amazing. And I thank you for being with us today. Now, her book, again, is called Food Lover's Guide to Seattle. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And please do stay with us. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Sylvia Henderson, your idea success coach and author of Hey, That's My Idea.
Taking care of thousands of animals every year is no walk in the park, but a walk in the park will help save thousands more. Join Paws this year for the 21st annual Paws Walk at Merrymore Park in Redmond on September 8th. But the walk is just the start. You can try the latest pet products at our doggy mall, run the canine agility course, or visit the Paws Kids Zone. You can even grab a pint of ale in the Pooch Pub. Put your team together today by registering at pawswalk.net. Or for more information, just go to paws.org. Paws, people helping animals, and vice versa.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Coming up next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. When cardiologist Barbara Natterson Horowitz was called to consult on an unusual patient at the Los Angeles Zoo, she discovered the tiny monkey had a syndrome identical to a human condition. She also discovered that veterinarians treated the condition in surprising and innovative ways. Join us next Monday for Zubiquity, what animals can teach us about health and the science of healing. Vicki also discovers how Lisa Jackson transformed from struggling mom to number one on the New York Times bestselling list. Her latest book, You Don't Want to Know, is based in the fog-filled islands off the Pacific Northwest. See conversationslive.net for guest details or contact Vicki at info@conversationslive.net.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Get your smile on with Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Karen Brown. You can find her at Frantic Foodie on Twitter. My next guest is Sylvia Henderson, an implementation strategist. She's also your idea success coach. She helps people gain clarity, develop strategy, start implementing, and stay accountable. That's probably the key thing there, staying accountable. She helps people take their ideas from an in-their-head idea to impact, and that's something she's created to help us remember the steps, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. The whole idea is to gain greater profits, more clients, and a higher degree of personal and professional success. Sylvia Henderson coaches, facilitates workshops, she speaks and produces educational tools supporting her expertise. She also hosts a Montgomery County cable TV program focusing on business and professional development called Think About It on MMC TV Channel 16. Sylvia Henderson, welcome to the show today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And I should say welcome back because you've been on here before, and we were talking last time about something entirely different, but we got to chatting about a book that you have out called Hey, That's My Idea, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Hey, That's My Idea, How to Speak Up and Get Recognized for What You Know and What You Think. And I was telling you during the break that I enjoyed reading this, and you said, well, I didn't write it to be enjoyed so much as to be used, and I said I enjoyed it because it is very usable. It's a great workbook.
Well, thank you. That's a compliment to a trainer.
yes, definitely. And from somebody who's done a lot of training herself over the years. So let's look at why you put this book together in the first place. Why did you think this, hey, that's my idea? Why was this necessary for you to write this?
It was necessary for me to write it because I experience constantly that exclamation of seeing something that I thought about or hearing somebody say something in a meeting that I said previously, and I see that same thing on TV or I hear it, you know, spoken by someone else, and I think, hey, that was my idea. So,
but of course you did nothing with it, right?
That's right. And I thought, so why don't I implement more ideas that I have? And I thought, well, other people don't implement all the ideas they have either, so let me help them in addition to helping myself.
Right. I'm going to ask you in a minute, what was one of your ideas? Now, I'll share one of my ideas because for years and years, as long as I can remember, I have cut the feet off pantyhose to put under sheer pants when I was in the business world. Now, I just, you know, think that's okay, just cutting the feet off my pantyhose. Sarah Blakely, however.
Yes. I knew you were going to talk about
that. Yeah, Sarah Blakely, however, takes her last $5,000 that she's 29 years old. She was 27, I think, when she came up with the idea. Well, surely other women must be doing the same thing. And she takes her $5,000. She is now 41. She is now a billionaire on Forbes' list. And, of course, we're talking about Spanx.
Yes.
So what was one of your ideas that you used to, maybe run with and did nothing with?
And some of those same success stories make me sit down and think, hey. one of the main things that propelled me to write the book was right when I left the corporate world, and this is typical of we entrepreneurs, when I left the corporate world, I had this brilliant idea of, we all carry laptops, and I got tired of the bulky laptop cases that I kept seeing. So I just sewed together the bottom part of a sweatpants leg.
Right.
And and slipped it onto my laptop. And people would see that and thought, hey, that's kind of a neat, thin, but still padded kind of a slip cover. And I didn't think much of it, except it gnawed at me for a while. And to make a longer story short, I thought about, let me call this, I could call this thing a sock, which is what fleece items are, but I called it a slip-on cover for SOC. And that idea just sat around and sat around and sat around in my head, still thinking it was a cool idea,
right,
but never
right.
implementing it. And
right.
lo and behold, I see a catalog company now makes neoprene, I think is the material,
yeah.
and other cloth,
yeah.
slip-on covers for the laptops. And I thought, I wonder how much money I just left on the table.
Yeah, and I'm sure everybody listening has an idea like this that they've had along the way. So I want to ask you, what stops most people doing this? And of course, it's fear. You talk about this in the book. Most of it is like, you know, what if I fail? What if I lose face, credibility? What if I lose status or money, love, respect?
Yep, all those things, plus procrastination. But
mm-hmm.
I'll talk to you about that later.
What, me personally?
No.
You know what I've been up to.
And self-doubt. In fact, that's probably, self-doubt is probably the root of a whole lot of the other reasons. You know, we doubt ourselves. We say, nah, that can't possibly be a marketable idea. Or, no, who am I to think that I can save the world with my idea? Or a lot of those kinds of thoughts. Oh, somebody else already thought of that. And we don't pursue it. And just like the Spank story, I just read about a 12-year-old girl who created an entire food drive that's going national for dogs, getting food for stray dogs that are taken in by Best Friends Society or any, you know, animal shelter. And that's just a 12-year-old girl. You can find a zillion of those kinds of examples of people who overcame their self-doubt
mm-hmm.
and implemented their idea. And I thought, I need to see more people do that.
Right. So you wrote this book, and where do we begin? How do we open ourselves up to our ideas? How do we get started?
Well, what I talk about in the book and what I teach is a process that I call impact, because one of the things we all want to do is, with our ideas, make an impact on the world, or on our bottom lines, or on our family. And so we start out with just getting all of the details, all of the things that get us stuck, get all those thoughts down somewhere. And that's the first step I take people through in capturing their ideas. I call it the initiate stage. That's initiating implementation rather than initiating an idea, because having the idea is part of the problem.
One of the things that you say, because I just want to throw this out there, is, you know, so many of us have so many ideas that can kind of thwart us in itself. And you do say focus on one idea at a time when you're going through this impact phase.
Yes. And a real simple way to do that, and this goes back to what my mom used to tell me when I was stuck in a quandary about something. She said, just fold a piece of paper and put a plus sign at the top of one column, a minus sign at the top of the other, and I put a little spot somewhere on that paper with things to think about. And on that piece of paper, take one idea and list the pros and the cons. And then if there are things you can't quite determine are a pro or a con, you put that down in the little note section that you have things to think about. And you do that same thing, get different pieces of paper for every idea you have. And then you look at your papers, spread them out, and you look at what has the most pros or the least cons, and to add to that, the things to think about. And if there's something that's an emotional connection in those things to think about that draws you more strongly towards that idea, and the pluses are a large number and the minuses are not a large number, I say go with that idea for a while, until we work through the details and you find out that, maybe this wasn't such a great idea or isn't going to benefit what I intended for it to benefit after all.
Right.
But that's one way to at least sort out your ideas
right.
to see which one to go with first. rather than just going with your gut.
Right. Now, sometimes when we get involved in an idea and we get all caught up in it, there comes a point where we realize, you know what, this just isn't viable, but we maybe don't want to let go of it because we see it as giving up. And sometimes it's a strength to know when to give up. So yeah. What tips do you have around knowing whether you're giving up because, you know, you should be giving up or, and I know you don't like the word should, or whether we're being, you know, just pigheaded about it and sticking with this idea and it's not going to work, or whether we're just quitting too early?
That is a good question, and that's probably the $1,000 question.
Right.
There is no set answer to that other than, number one, if you're implementing an idea for a marketable purpose or a marketable reason to make money, one of the first ways to try out your idea is to gather a focus group. Get a few, and preferably not your friends and family, because they tend to say, for your own good, we just think that's going to be too hard. So I say gather a focus group of colleagues or of other of your target market to try out your idea and see what they think. Now, I might say in doing that, you want to make sure that your intellectual property is protected before you go spilling your idea to everybody. But if the focus group or two or three of them give you feedback that, I wouldn't spend money on this, that might give you pause to think about, well, maybe this isn't a viable idea, or how, ask them, so what would you do with this to spend, that would be worth your while?
Right.
So that's one way. Have a focus group to try out your idea.
Right. Simple and inexpensive, and you'll get, you know, hopefully good feedback from that.
Right.
Yeah.
And social media is a huge way to find out, you know, to test the waters, to see if people would buy it.
Right, right. So let's look at impact. It's a mnemonic. Mnemonic that you created so that we'd remember this process, impact. And if we could just go through, we've already talked about initiating your idea. M stands for molding your message. What do we need to do when we're molding our message, Sylvia?
Once we've captured all our details, and I use the great American tool called sticky notes.
There you go.
To do that. You've got a whole jumble of a lot of your detail down on these papers. And you're thinking, okay, I'm just as confused as I was before, only now it's on paper. Well, that's great. The reason why I put it down on paper and have you spread out your details, literally physically spread them out, is to mold your message. You can then see and put structure to all the notes you wrote. And it's amazing. I'm fascinated by how people get clarity by just seeing their brains on paper.
Right.
And they can put some structure to their idea. That structure then helps you move to the P stage, which is plot your strategy. And that's where you rearrange your notes and you see some patterns that might work for implementing your idea. And then you plot out, okay, for this piece of my idea, let's say I need to get intellectual property taken care of. And you've got all your thoughts down about that in that category. Then you plot your strategy for to whom do you need to reach out for intellectual property rights? What do they need to know about your idea? What do you and then how will you reach them? You're literally plotting out your strategy for everybody you need to connect with regards to your idea. And
right.
Everybody's going to be different. Financing,
right.
Your spousal support if you need somebody to take the load off of you family-wise. That's plotting your strategy. How are you going to reach the people you need to reach, and what are you going to tell them about your idea so that they'll support it?
Right.
The A is attention commanded. Well, this is getting into presentation skills now. How are the people you have to reach going to listen to you if you don't grab their attention? And I give all kinds of attention-grabbing techniques in the book.
You know, I love the way you define a difference and the important difference between command attention versus demand attention.
Nobody wants to be told, hey, listen to me. Or they talk about, you've heard the adage that people won't listen to you when you're screaming.
Right.
They'll listen to you when you're speaking calmly. And that's a little bit of the tenet behind attention commanded rather than demanded.
Right. And as you say in the book, the derivative, the C-O-M of command means bringing together with and together, and demanding, the D, means down and away. So if we listen to our language, it tells us exactly what we should be doing.
So much, yes, yes. It's a lot of, they say, sticks and stones break my bones, words will never harm me, and that is a falsehood, because words matter so much in how people hear you and connect with you.
Yes, definitely. So redirect conversations if necessary. I mean, we really need to learn how to command attention and hold people's attention and spend some time practicing that. And then the C in impact is communicate for action. Talk to us a little bit about that.
And that's using communication skills. When you were saying the redirect, you know, the other key part of the communication, as I stumble here, is really knowing your message, because so many times when you're talking to people, when they'll ask you questions, they'll steer you astray in your presentation or your conversation. But if you know, that's part of that strategy, if you know what you're trying to get across to them and why, you can come back to that even when you're interrupted. So the C is really, it's the communication skills. How do we communicate our messages verbally? How do we use our voice? How do we use our body language? How do we show our idea in visually? They're all, I talk about a lot of communication skills in
yes.
order to get your message across effectively.
Right. And so
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, go ahead. The T stands for terminate assertively.
Yep, terminate effectively or assertively, and that's the close. That's what, you've gone through all of the strategy, you've communicated your idea to the targeted audiences. Ooh, I shouldn't use the word targeted because that sounds kind of rough, but to the audience that you want to reach, now what are you going to ask them? And that's what terminate means. What's the close? What's the call to action in another, phrasing it another way,
right,
that you're going to ask them, because you intend to ask for something, whether it's support, whether it's financing, whether it's take the kids to school tomorrow because I need the time. So that's to terminate. What's your call to action?
Right.
And that's why those last three letters, the A, the C, and the T, all relate to the action after you've planned your strategy.
Yeah, great. Some great tools, great tips and resources in this book. We're almost coming to the end of our segment, but I wanted to quickly say that you say stories, problems, and situations typically have a somebody wanted but so scenario driving them. Tell us what you mean by that in a couple of sentences, if you can. I know you did devote
That's
a lot
okay.
more time in the book.
That's okay. One technique, then, is to convince somebody, persuade somebody of your ideas, to say, well, somebody wanted, you know, our client wanted this doohickey. That's my idea.
Right, right.
And somebody wanted, but they haven't been able to get the right doohickey to meet their needs. So my idea for a better doohickey is, and you say your idea. And when people see that somebody wanted it, the reason why they can't get it, and how your idea relates to giving them what they want, then that's a more convincing argument for implementing your idea.
Excellent.
And I hope nobody really has a doohickey that they're trying to sell.
Well, next time I have an idea like, cutting, you know, feet off my pantyhose, this book walks you step by step through the process of what you need to do to take those ideas from your head and put them into action. We're almost at the end of our segment. I want to let listeners know, Sylvia, that you have an Idea Success Summit coming up in October. There's links to it from our website. It's a 3-day summit. You go with an idea, leave with an implementation strategy and accountability support, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes. And that's, we take you through the whole process in 3 days instead of you mulling around over it for 3 months.
There you go. And procrastination, which we never even got to talk about because we procrastinated on procrastination. and also if listeners go to your website and buy the book from there, hey, that's my idea, how to speak up and get recognized for what you know and think, they can get an autographed copy there, correct?
Yes.
Super.
They just need to put Vicky St. Clair in their email there or the form there. And final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Final thought is don't procrastinate. Don't let self-doubt take over for implementing your ideas. I've got tips and strategies at my website that I send out to people with your email address. And just reach out to someone else you trust to get clear, to get strategies, to implement and be accountable to your ideas.
There we go. Sylvia Henderson, author of Hey, That's My Idea, How to Speak Up and Get Recognized for What You Know and Think. Also tips in here about how to speak up at work if people are nicking your ideas, which happens a lot in the corporate environment. You can find out lots more about Sylvia and her work and her books and her resources at ideasuccessnetwork.com and springboardtraining.com. There's a whole product section on springboardtraining.com. We have to fly out of here because that 20 minutes flew right by real quick. This whole hour's gone really quick. We'll be back next week with an all-live new show. Please join us then. Thanks for being with us. Live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.